The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network. Are you a healthcare professional looking to translate psychedelic research into practice? Then register for Psychedelic Harm Reduction and Integration, a professional training offered by psychologist Elizabeth Nielsen and Ingmar Gorman at the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York, May 24th through 26. Earn 12 continuing education credits as you discover how to better support clients who have an interest in psychedelics. Learn more at eomega.org/thrive.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Welcome to the award-winning podcast, Mental Health, Hope, and Recovery. I'm Helen Sneed.
And I'm Valerie Milburn.
We both have fought and overcome severe chronic mental illnesses. Our podcast offers a unique approach to mental health conditions. We use practical skills and inspirational true stories of recovery. Our knowledge is up close and personal.
Helen and I are your peers. We're not doctors, therapists, or social workers. We're not professionals, but we are experts. We are experts in our own lived experience with multiple mental health diagnoses and symptoms. Please join us on our journey.
We live in recovery. So can you. This podcast does not provide medical advice. The information presented is not intended to be a substitute or relied upon as medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. The podcast is for informational purposes only. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health providers with any health-related questions you may have.
Welcome to episode 40, Loneliness, Pathways to Connection. This is the second of our two episodes on loneliness. Helen, you and I started thinking about the importance of loneliness as a topic for one of our episodes when the Surgeon General issued an advisory in May of 2023, an advisory that declared loneliness a health crisis in our country. And we're addressing loneliness because of its severe consequences, not only to those battling mental health challenges, but because of its severe physical, emotional, and economic impacts on all who face social disconnection. And as we have said so many times on this podcast, loneliness and isolation can kill. If you have not listened to our previous episode, episode 39, Loneliness, the New American Epidemic, I highly recommend that episode as a starting point for this discussion on loneliness. But here's a quick recap of episode 39. In that episode, we looked at some of the information that led the Surgeon General to issue this advisory declaring loneliness a health crisis. And I'll share just one thing that sums it up. One in two adults in America reported experiencing loneliness before the COVID-19 pandemic. In episode 39, we talked about the things that are causing this crisis of loneliness in our country, the things that are related to the individual, those related to biological genetic factors, and the causes that are based on societal changes. And these causes of loneliness are eye-opening. There are a couple of things from episode 39 that are important to repeat here. One is that studies have found the highest prevalence of loneliness and isolation among people with poor physical and mental health, those with disabilities or financial insecurity, those who live alone, single parents, and younger and older population. The second thing is that numerous research studies conclude that socially connected people live longer, period. socially connected people live longer. In fact, 148 studies suggest that social connection increases the odds of survival by 50%. There's so much information in episode 39, information on the psychological impact of loneliness and its double-edged sword relationship to mental illness. Also in that episode, Helen and I share our personal journeys with loneliness and social disconnection throughout our lives. So episode 39's look at the background and consequences of loneliness sets up today's episode. And that today's episode is a look at how to build social connections. We're going to see today that loneliness can be overcome. Social connections can be forged. So, Helen, let's dive in.
Well, we're ready for this one. Valerie, to begin with, let's just look at the meanings of the key words to be sure that we're all on the same page. Loneliness. The Oxford Dictionary says, sadness because one has no friends or company. Now, the American Psychological Association goes further. Loneliness is discomfort or uneasiness for being or perceiving oneself to be alone. Then there is isolation, the state of being in a place or situation that is separate from others. So you can see that loneliness is an internal feeling, whereas isolation is more a physical state where a person is apart from other people. Now, here are two others. Solitude, the state or situation of being alone or apart from society, and belonging, a feeling of being happy or comfortable as part of a particular group.
I'm glad you shared those. That does indeed put a framework around what we're going to talk about today. And I mentioned that in episode 39, Helen, you and I shared our stories about the role that loneliness played in our lives. And that was kind of the dark side of our journeys with loneliness. And now today, we're going to share how we reconnected and how it was part of our recovery. And I think you're going to kick that off today. So if you'd please share that part of your journey with us, it would be much appreciated and thoroughly enjoyed.
Well, Valerie, I am happy to report that this part of my story is the good news. Now, in the last episode, I said that people are the most important thing in the world to me. Throughout my struggles with mental illness, they were a source of torment. I was so disconnected from the human race that the loneliness was like torture. People became the reason I wanted to die. And in this episode, people became the reason I wanted to live, literally. Now, this entire episode is devoted to overcoming loneliness and to proving that other people are absolutely necessary to achieving and maintaining recovery. Well, I know this is true in my case. So how did I overcome a lifetime of loneliness? I want to touch on just some of the countless ways that people brought me back from the dead. Well, it's all about relationships, which we're going to discuss today. To begin with, my relationship with myself had to be improved. Many of my thoughts and core beliefs challenged and corrected. Well, this was incredibly difficult and an ongoing battle, sometimes to this very minute. But my thoughts and feelings improved when I was with people again. They so often reflected back to me a better image of myself. Now, I've always relished knowing all kinds of people, and generally, I have treated others well. It also helped to have a variety of friends so that I didn't put all my hopes on one relationship or expect one person to meet all my needs. And I stopped waiting on a man or woman on a white horse to ride to my rescue. The dream of an abused child, but anathema for an adult. I learned to take action again, reaching out to people I hadn't seen in years, as well as making new friends. I mean, so much of opportunity comes from others, but you have to be out there to reach it. When I wrote a play, it took forever for me to entrust it to friends. When I finally sent it out, all it took was for one person to love it, and that led to an off-Broadway production. My friends and strangers brought me back to life. Through connection with them, I rejoined the human race. Now, we're also going to discuss strategies and skills that can successfully overcome loneliness. There are methods I used and still use to this day. First off is skills training through DBT. It focuses largely on building healthy relationships and also teaches goal setting, you know, with skills to get people into your life. And for me, it had to begin with small steps, a phone call, text, coffee, or a walk. Exercise led to making wonderful new friends at my gym. I even made an ideal schedule for myself, you know, seldom achieving anything on it because it was like, you know, what the perfect day would look like. But I learned to congratulate myself for getting anything done. And the less lonely I became, the more I was able to be with people. You see, it just kept expanding outward. My friends in group therapy helped alleviate my loneliness, as did mentoring in a job program for people with borderline personality disorder. It was the first time I had given back in years. Now, one of the bravest things I did in those years was down in the Bowery, still a rough New York neighborhood in those days. My friend David and I were going to dinner in the theater. Rather than wear the black clothes I had worn exclusively for years, at the last minute, I put on a beautiful pink jacket. I will never know how I did this. And when I walked into the restaurant, David looked at me beaming. "Now I know you're well," he said. "You're wearing pink in the Bowery."
Well, I just love that image.
The process was never perfect or linear. It can't be for anyone, I don't think. But gradually, the loneliness was replaced with true, authentic relationships. My hardwired, hard-driving brain was soothed by the positive hormones and chemicals generated by face-to-face human contact. I mean, they have proved this now. I knew nothing then about the demands of my brain. All I knew was that I felt better and had the sense of belonging again. Well, there was one night I'll never forget. I had a large group of friends that I had abandoned when I got so sick. I mean, I just disappeared. And every year they had a big holiday party that I had missed for 5 years straight. Well, the following year, I made myself go. And it was really, really hard. But I confided my fears in one close friend who was also going to be there, you know, someone to give me support. Well, it was a triumph. I hugged everyone. I was upbeat. I listened to how they were doing in life, worked the room, and I really felt that I was welcome back. My friend and I left the party together, and he was blown away by my success. He kept saying that I was back to my old self. And all I could say was, over and over, "I can't believe it. I can't believe I did it." I can sum up the key to recovery in just three words. They were written by the great novelist E.M. Forster. He said, "Connect, only connect." In order to live a full life in recovery, I connect every day. And some of the deepest connections have been with strangers. When I first began telling my story before an audience, I was worried about offending people. And after one presentation, a woman approached me and she was crying. "Are you all right?" I asked. "Can I help you?" "You already have helped me," she replied. "You've given me more hope than I've felt in years." Well, I will never forget her. Through our brief connection, I learned that my long, ugly story had value to other people. I could pull beauty from the darkness. I could give people hope.
That story does give people hope, especially knowing the other side of your story that you shared last episode. Thank you for spreading that beautiful hope. And as you just shared, loneliness can be overcome. And social connection can be a significant conduit, both to recovery and then to support us in our recovery. I mean, I can't sustain my recovery without social connection.
And I know it can't be done. No, not for me.
It can't. And, you know, the research shows, as we've already said, that social connection literally saves lives. And we shared last episode that loneliness, you know, is one of the biggest protectors against both suicide and self-harm. I mean, just so much positive stuff shows that research shows that frequently confiding in others actually prevents depression. But, you know, for many of us who live with a mental illness, particularly when we are deeply symptomatic, we are just socially disconnected. And so how do we overcome this disconnection, these feelings of loneliness, that cave of isolation we may have constructed? Well, the first thing to know is it can be done. It must be done. And we're going to spend the rest of this episode showing how to build social connection. We have steps, strategies, skills, and ideas for our listeners, both from our personal experience and from the and ideas that we've gathered from excellent resources. So, Helen, you want to kick it off with relationships?
Well, I think, you know, we can't go much farther without looking at relationships. In one study on loneliness, people judged a hill to be less steep when climbing it with a friend compared to going it alone. Well, this is says a whole lot. I think this is a very articulate little sentence. Because conquering loneliness requires action. It means pursuing relationships. And remember that a person needs to have a healthy relationship with him or herself. Now, to begin, it helps to determine what kind of person to cultivate, what kind of person is desirable or appealing. So it's a good idea to make a list of qualities, people, and organizations that are the most attractive, common interests, values, humor, and then prioritize one or two people to begin cultivating. And start small. We keep saying this, start small. Don't be overwhelmed by going after or wanting to know too many people at once. And you can use the goal-setting strategies that Valerie's going to discuss. Now, an individual, I recommend that an individual also keep a list of people and relationships already known. Who can be trusted? Who can be asked for help? Who can a person be candid with, you know, and tell the truth? Keep this list nearby. It's a good idea for referral if times get too hard or lonely. Now, as Valerie said, this is all about building social connections. So first, it's wise to define a healthy relationship. Well, Oprah Winfrey said, lots of people want to ride with you in the limo, but what you want is someone who will take the bus with you when the limo breaks down. Now, this is very wise, and a healthy relationship contains trust, respect, acceptance, safety, honesty, companionship, good communications. No one friend can provide all of those things. We know that. But these are very good markers to keep in mind. The unhealthy relationship can be a real trap for a lonely person. It can seem better to have an unhealthy relationship than none at all. Or an individual can feel unworthy of anyone better. So here are some signs. Abuse, unhealthy habits and addictions, fear of the person's anger and ridicule, loss of identity, lack of respect, control issues, exploitation. Then there are family relationships. Mary Carr once said, a dysfunctional family is a family with more than one person in it.
Amen.
I think this is very true. So one good strategy is to look on the family as a group of individuals, you know, person by person by person, is not as some big, you know, mega entity. This can put the relationships in better perspective. It's another chance to make a list of the relatives that can be relied on for support and kindness. For those who feel lonely when surrounded by family, this can reduce the sense of isolation. It's just a really good idea to have a strategy in mind before seeing relatives. Community relationships. Many of the same criteria exist when searching for company and meaning within the community. Begin with interest that you find appealing and challenges that you would like to learn. Where would the person like to find a sense of belonging? To make a contribution as a volunteer? Community service can bring about a sense of fulfillment or be, you know, just as fun as a softball team. Through being part of a group activity, deep individual relationships can also grow. Connection with others is the cornerstone of overcoming loneliness. And a healthy relationship enriches a life immeasurably. Albert Camus famously said of his relationships, "Don't walk in front of me, I may not follow. Don't walk behind me, I may not lead. Just walk beside me and be my friend." I encourage you to visit our episodes 3, 4, 5, and 6 on relationships. We thoroughly examine a wide range of relationships, including friends, family, therapeutic, and romantic.
Are you a healthcare professional looking to translate psychedelic research into practice? Then register for Psychedelic Harm Reduction and Integration, a professional training offered by psychologist Elizabeth Nielsen and Ingmar Gorman at the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York, May 24th through 26. Earn 12 continuing education credits as you discover how to better support clients who have an interest in psychedelics. Learn more at eomega.org/thrive.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's take a look at goal setting. We're going to look at manageable techniques for finding relationships through goal setting. Now, for me, there are two important things about goals. First one, a goal doesn't exist unless it's defined and written down. The second is to just take a first step toward the goal, no matter how small. So for me, I like to define what will be done and when it will be completed. Napoleon Hill said, "A goal is a dream with a deadline." So that's the first step to a goal, defining what will be done and when it will be completed. For example, today I will identify one person I can reach out to. Tomorrow I will call, email, or text that person I identified. The goal should be specific and manageable. To identify one person today and send one text tomorrow. So the overall goal could be bigger, such as I will have a coffee date next week, but there's not going to be a coffee date without identifying the person you're going to reach out to and then actually reaching out, send that person an email, a text, a phone call. Now, there's a wonderful technique for creating effective goals, and it's called SMART goals. And we explain SMART goals, the technique called SMART goals. We explain that in episode 9 called Goal Setting, A Necessity for Recovery. And if you haven't yet listened to episode 9, it's an excellent resource for goal setting. Now, these are some ideas from the Surgeon General's report for what individuals can do to advance social connection. These are great ideas for goal setting. The first one is take time each day to reach out to a friend or family member. Another one is minimize distractions during conversations to increase the quality of time spent with others. And some examples of minimizing distractions are don't check our phones during meals with family members or friends. Don't check our phones during important conversations or family time in general. Another suggestion, another idea is reduce practices that lead us to feelings of being disconnected from others. Practices such as harmful or excessive social media use or too much time in front of screens instead of people. And lastly, here are some tips, just general tips for goal setting. It takes risk, courage, and work. Helen and I talk about this all the time. Risk, courage, and work is part of goal setting. Another is measure progress, not completion. And Helen, you just talked about this in your story. Acknowledge what was accomplished. Also, don't look back. Just keep picking yourself up and making a fresh start each day. And Nelson Mandela summed that up in this quote of his. Do not judge me by my successes. Judge me by how many times I fell down and got back up again.
I think that quote completely reversed my worldview. The first time I heard it, I just think it's exceptional. Now, Valerie has mentioned goal setting, which, you know, is incredibly important in all of this. There are other skills and methods to create social connection through community and individual relationships. And there are other skills and methods that we know can support efforts to overcome loneliness and build better relationships. So to begin with, self-care, exercise, sleep, proper diet, living within your financial means, skills training, which we've discussed, forgo online time for real life encounters face-to-face, classes, do volunteer work in the community. Again, small goals, text, phone, coffee, a walk with a friend. Keep it small. Own a pet. Join a team. Learn about loneliness and its impact. Be educated and informed about the problem that needs to be addressed. And finally, share a meal. This is a 12,000-year-old ritual. It comes way before people even were in the caves. And it was something that was done to, again, for basic survival, to be with people and to have enough food to not starve. And so it just makes a person feel better to do this. Now, the flip side is, of course, how do you cultivate solitude as a positive time? Now, for me, so much of my time was spent solitude was simply horrible, and it went on for years. So there are ways, though, to convert it. And so let's look at some of these methods: communicating with friends, planning the week, spirituality and faith practices, mindfulness and meditation, yoga, keep a journal, reading, creative pursuits such as drawing, writing, playing an instrument, self-care, making the bed, adequate sleep, hygiene, exercises, and playing with or grooming a pet. Now, Dr. John Cacioppo has put together this beautiful list of qualities to combat loneliness, and it spells out the word grace. So here are the qualities: gratitude, reciprocity, altruism, choice, and enjoyment.
I love that, grace. The next thing I want to look at is something that's super important, and that is what parents and caregivers can do to advance social connection. Because we already talked about this, what we learn or seen modeled in childhood has a lifelong impact on us. So the first thing I want to look at is the importance of modeling healthy social connection. And the things to model are model constructive conflict resolution and spending time together. Model staying in regular contact with extended family, friends, neighbors. Show children how to set time aside for socializing away from technology or social media and participating in community events. is another important thing to model. Another technique for helping kids develop social connection is to work with kids to develop strong, safe, stable relationships with other supportive adults, such as grandparents, teachers, coaches, counselors, and mentors. It's also important to help encourage healthy social connections with their peers, support their individual friendships, and help them participate in structured activities such as volunteering, sports, community activities. It's really important to be attentive to how young people spend their time online. One strategy is to just delay the age at which children can join social media platforms. And the other one is to monitor and decrease screen time. It's important to identify and aim to reduce behaviors and experiences that can increase the risk for social disconnection. And some of these, two of the major ones are bullying and, again, excessive or harmful social media use. Just talking to our children about social connection regularly helps so much. Talking to our children helps us to, one, understand if they're struggling with loneliness or isolation, helps to destigmatize talking about these feelings. Just talking helps kids talk more and also creates space for children to share their own perspectives and needs. And lastly, look out for potential warning signs of loneliness and isolation. And these warning signs are increased time spent alone, disproportional online time, limited interaction with friends, and excessive attention-seeking behavior.
Well, thank you, Valerie, because it seems to me that it's so important for parents and caregivers and all of us, really, to remember that we are all in this together. And that the point of, again, of connection, especially with children, can be so very important. Now, we've seen that loneliness is the new American epidemic, yes, but what we've learned is that the individual can play a major part in fighting it. Both the internal struggle within and in relationships with family, friends, and the community. In the realm of mental health challenges, loneliness can be a pernicious cause and effect, but the means of overcoming it are clear and accessible. They are proven factors for recovery. In these two episodes, we've uncovered the depths of loneliness as a sickness within our society and within ourselves. But beside the hard news, there is abundant cause for healing and optimism because the capability lies within us. A host of experts have studied the malady and can prove that change can promote healing of mental illnesses. Okay, it's not an easy or quick fix, nothing ever is, but alleviation of loneliness lies within the capability, heart, and spirit of virtually every person. The breadth of research defines and proves many avenues that the mentally challenged individual can use. We've learned that the brain has the capability to rewire itself. The neuroplastic nature of the brain can create different pathways, can reinforce those changes, and the brain can snap back. Positive emotions can attenuate the negative effects of perceived loneliness. Also, a lonely mind can be healed with help from the body and vice versa. Many positive changes are possible when loneliness is alleviated. So build social networks, learn how to reach out and how to listen, and better understand bridges of human connection. There's evidence on all sides to demonstrate how human connection can heal even the most afflicted among us. With proper treatment, support, and resolve, a person can take actions needed to heal him or herself. Dr. Jeremy Nobel said, "Social connections, in a very real way, are keys to happiness and health." Connection as an antidote to painful solitude is a two-way street. Remember that each one of us has the capacity to address the loneliness in another, to alleviate, even just for a few minutes with a few words or a smile, the loneliness we see in the eyes of others, the loneliness that is plaguing our entire nation. For even the loneliest person among us, there are many proven pathways to hope and recovery through connection.
I want to come full circle here, and it's these lyrics we opened episode 39 with, and it actually plays exactly on the words you just used, the loneliness we see in the eyes of others. These are lyrics from John Prine's song, Hello in There. And these lyrics are a reminder of the beauty and the importance of making a human connection, and also of how simple it can be. So here are John Prine's lyrics. So if you're walking down the street sometime and spot some hollow, ancient eyes, please don't just pass them by and stare as if you didn't care. Say, hello in there, hello.
You know, this seems like the most appropriate place to close our topic. On a note of real optimism and hope for ourselves and our countries. As with most sagas, the most enlightenment seems to reside in the individual story of struggle and recovery. So, Valerie, will you tell us about your own experiences with loneliness and the struggle for recovery?
I will. I shared last episode how disconnected I became as I spiraled deep into my mental health crisis, and healing from that crisis required reconnecting with family, friends, and with society as a whole, because I had withdrawn completely. But as I got well, I was able to understand and articulate what had happened to me, and also to be able to share what I had learned. I could share with my husband my triumphs, and I could help him understand my journey, and thus he and I began to reconnect. And I found Alcoholics Anonymous, and there I found my tribe. I connected at a deep level with other alcoholics because of the strength of the common bond of our disease and the common bond of our recovery. In the fellowship of AA, I was not alone. And as I got sober, I began to reconnect with my children. I first had to let go of the shame and guilt I had about what I had put them through, that sense of worthlessness that keeps me separate from others. I had to trust myself enough to be their mother again. I had to love myself enough to feel worthy of their love. You know, looking back on it, like I said, it was this sense of unworthiness that led me to isolating through the worst of my mental health journey. I mean, I would think, who would want to be around me in the condition I was in? Again, it was these thoughts that led to loneliness. So as I recovered, I went back to work, and this was a wonderful way to reconnect with the world. I made new friends, found new interests, and then I began volunteering when I was about 5 years sober. I started volunteering, leading 12-step meetings in a local psychiatric hospital. This also brought new friends into my life, new friends who were also volunteering, and it brought a new sense of purpose. Sharing my journey, my own journey from being a psychiatric patient to where I currently was in my recovery life, sharing that with those currently in a psychiatric hospital moved my healing to a new dimension. And the connection the patients and I had with each other was a beautiful thing. And as the years have gone by, I have done more and more volunteering. The connections I make through volunteering they just help keep me in recovery. I connect with the students I present mental health information to. I connect with the community members I share my story with. I connect with the law enforcement officers I present to during their crisis intervention training. My experiences are of value. What I share is of value. I am of value. It's this connection that brings me back into being a part of humanity. Now, once when we had been married for about 10 years, and that was 30 years ago, my husband said he couldn't be all things to me. Now, at the time, I was stunned and angry. I was only in my early 30s at that time, and my psychiatric breakdown was just around the corner. I was not healthy. I couldn't see the truth and wisdom in his statement. But now I know, as Helen, you said several times, just as you were sharing your story, I know that no one can be all things to anyone. I know I need many people in my life. I need family, all kinds of family, the family I was born into, the family I married into, and the family I have chosen. I know I need my friends, my sponsor, sponsees, mentors, fellow volunteers, my AA community. I need those who offer practical support, professional support, healthcare support. I need social connection. I need human connection.
Well, I know that you have found it. And you know, I guess it's an odd kind of thing of this doesn't necessarily apply to friendships, but you've earned it because you have made it a two-way street and you get a lot from it and you give a lot.
Thank you, Helen.
And I think that's the whole point of this business of human connection. Now, Valerie, I think it would be great if you could lead us in a mindfulness exercise.
I will do that, and I have a good one. Let's close today's episode in our traditional way with a mindfulness exercise. What is mindfulness? I always give a definition. Mindfulness is a mental state achieved by focusing one's awareness on the present moment while calmly acknowledging and accepting one's feelings, thoughts, and bodily sensations without judgment. Today's mindfulness exercise is called, How Do I Really Feel? Sometimes we feel lonely because we hide who we are and how we're feeling from others. Being vulnerable, sharing how we are really feeling, can leave us feeling a little tender and exposed. But the beauty is that telling how we really feel facilitates true connection. By opening ourselves up to be seen and heard, we're no longer alone in our inner experience. Let's try it. Let's get mindful. Close your eyes if you can. Let's settle in and breathe. As always, let's begin with a few diaphragmatic breaths. Whether your eyes are open or closed, let's steady our breathing. When you do this on your own, take as many diaphragmatic breaths as you need to become calm and centered. I usually take 10 to start my mindfulness and meditation practice. Let's breathe. Inhale through your nose, expanding an imaginary balloon in your stomach as you inhale. Exhale through your mouth, pulling your stomach in as you do so. Drop your shoulders. Again, inhale through your nose, expand that balloon in your stomach, exhale through your mouth, pulling your stomach in, pull it all the way in. Keep this slow, steady breath going. Visualize yourself in a familiar public place, your coffee shop, the grocery store, your gym, someplace you go regularly. It's a day that's not going well. For whatever the reason you can recall, it's just not a good day. Visualize running into a good friend. Your friend says, Hey, good to see you. How are you? Well, it's not a good day, so visualize responding truthfully. Maybe you say, "It's good to see you too. I'm actually having a tough day. It's great to see a friend." Or if appropriate, you say, "The truth is, I'm in a funk and could use a hug." Visualize making a true connection. Call to mind a way to be seen and heard today, a way to share your inner experience. It could be as simple as looking the grocery checkout person in the eye and asking, "How is your day going?" Or it could be reaching out for help. Or calling a friend or family member and saying, "I love you." If your eyes are closed, please open them and gently bring yourself back to the room. Thank you for doing this mindfulness exercise with me.
Thank you, Valerie. I think that was one of the best exercises that you've ever led, and I really appreciate it.
Wow. Thank you, Helen.
So this brings our episode to a close, our 40th, which gives us great cause for celebration. If you missed episode 39, the companion to this one, we really encourage you to listen. Our deepest gratitude goes out to our audiences around the globe. Valerie and I hope that you can help us reach more people by posting reviews and spreading the word through social media. In our next episode, we'll look into a concept that raises many stark questions about life and recovery and its potential. The subject is thriving after mental health challenges. The first goal for all of us is to survive, right? But is it also possible to thrive? Yes. But what does this mean? And how does one achieve it? Please join us as we share what we learned about surviving, thriving, and our own experiences. And now I leave you with our favorite word, onward.
Are you looking for help on your path to healing? I'm Lisa Campion. I'm a psychic, Reiki master, teacher, and energy healer. On my podcast, The Miracle of Healing, I'm going to help you on your healing path. Listen to conversations with leading teachers in energy medicine, quantum healing, and people who have recovered from loss and illness. Whether it's to take care of your own healing or to help other people, this is the podcast for you, right here on mindbodyspirit.fm.